And today we're going to be starting Acts chapter 15. And as we went over last week, which was the account of Galatians chapter 2, which was Paul's account that preceded what happened here, and it was the background story of Acts chapter 15. But just to recap what occurred, Paul and Barnabas came off of their first missionary journey and came back to Antioch where they started. And they were teaching and, first telling everyone the good news of, well, of course, it was, I get you could say good and bad, positives and negatives. Paul. They intended to stone Paul to death and thought they had, but he was not dead. And he'd been run out of Antioch and Iconium and stoned to death in Lystra. Now, nothing bad happened in Derbe. But anyway, all these other cities, it wasn't all positive. But what was positive, there were many Gentiles, namely Gentiles. Now, there were also Jews in there too. Because these were all came out of these Jewish synagogues, even the Gentiles, they were proselytes of Judaism, most all of them, because that's where Paul was teaching out of. And what Kaufman mentioned was that these were the brightest of or the ripest fruits straight out of Judaism. Very similarly to what was in Acts 2 with those devout Jews that showed up on the day of Pentecost, and they were ready for the knowledge and of how to enter God's kingdom. And so they were in that same right frame of mind as they were in Acts 2. And anyway, so here they had at least four congregations, but it was even in Pamphylia here, so there's a fifth one there, and I guess Perga too. And all of this was known as Galatia. The Galatian region is what the Romans called it. Now the Greeks, the locals here who were Greeks, they didn't call it that. They separated it further down into these other territories, but Rome called it the Galatian territory, so that's what Paul used and wrote this one letter to the Galatians. But anyways, they were coming back here, and Luke said they spent a considerable amount of time in Antioch, Paul and Barnabas did, teaching. And Kaufman figured that's probably about a year, year and a half. The best he could figure that this missionary journey took about 3.5 years from the time they left Antioch to the time they came back. And then, and which was 45 AD when they left, and got back. And at the end of the time of what could be considered, not the end of the first missionary journey, which would have been more like 3.5 years, but an extra year to year and a half to take out the balance of 5 years. So from the time they left Antioch for the first missionary journey to the time they leave Antioch again at the end of Acts 15 on the second missionary journey, 5 years has elapsed, which includes this council at so-called council at Jerusalem. But so here Paul and Barnabas are teaching in Antioch, having great success. The people are so excited to hear the good news of all of the people here in the Galatian territory that have become Christians. And Paul's appointed elders in these congregations, and then he's teaching them. And this is the third largest city, so there's the field is wide into harvest here in Antioch too, just right here alone with all of the people. And this is also a hub of commerce, a commerce hub here in Antioch, being so close to the Mediterranean Sea. And so there's a lot of people always coming in. So there's always people to be taught here in Antioch. And so I guess that's part of what Paul and Barnabas were taking advantage of on this extended period of time. So the problem that comes up that resulted in Acts 15 and then in several of the quotes from Paul in Galatians chapter 2 is, here there were some former Pharisees who have become Christians. They came up to Antioch while Paul and Barnabas and even Peter, in the meantime here, Peter had come up. And so everything was going well. They were teaching everyone. But then this group from Jerusalem came up to Antioch, and they were teaching the false message that before you could, before any Gentile could become a Christian, they would have to be circumcised and follow the law of Moses. And what came up in Galatians chapter 2 that Paul tells on Peter is that Peter was eating with the Gentiles and no problem at all here in Antioch until these former Pharisees came up. Then Peter no longer ate with the Gentiles, and he would only eat with the other Jews. And so that's when Paul said he confronted Peter to the face on his hypocrisy, because Peter, of all people, should have known more than that. And he'd been teaching all these years. God revealed it to him first that the Gentiles were to were allowed to be entered enter into God's kingdom without any obedience to the old law. And you know why he misunderstood, reverted back. You know, this was a bad form of recidivism, is what he did for whatever reason. That's not explained. Now, what is explained is, though, once Paul calls him out on it, then Peter changes immediately. So he knew that he was doing incorrectly, and, you know, very likely he just reverted back to his old ways that we get in the accounts of the gospel when he denied Jesus three times. And so here it is, his weakness of the flesh is what Jesus told him and the other apostles back when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. It was the weakness of the flesh, and so that came through again here. But he did get straightened out by Paul, and so then God commands how Paul words it in Galatians chapter 2 is the Spirit sent him down to Jerusalem to get this all straight and to stop this false teaching that the Gentiles have to be obedient to the old covenant in order to become Christians. So Peter, Paul, Barnabas, Titus, and then possibly Silas too. He's not mentioned, but Kaufman mentions that he went, and I didn't get a reference of where he got that. But anyway, what Luke says, and others. And Kaufman thought that Silas was probably included in that. But anyway, they go down to Jerusalem now. And what is significant is before this meeting, then Paul again gets with Peter, James, and James, the son of Jesus. Not the son of Jesus, the brother of Jesus, the half-brother of Jesus, and with John. So the apostles Peter and John, and then Jesus' brother James, gets with them before the meeting to go over what this meeting is going to be about to straighten out this false teaching. And so that results in the last half or so of this chapter on of this meeting that occurs. And then there's a letter that is written initially to the congregation at Antioch, but I'm sure it got spread to all of them, to from the congregation of Jerusalem, to let them know that this false teaching that had been spread was completely false, and that was not to be followed. But then they do give four guidelines or four statements of what to avoid which is mostly pertaining to blood, eating of blood, sacrificing blood, and things such as that. And then, of course, also somewhere here in the meantime, the same group of former Pharisees who've become Christians obviously sent a delegation up here to this Galatian territory, all these congregations where Paul had been teaching and appointed elders, and they were spreading this same false message and forcing these Gentiles to become be circumcised before they could become Christians. And they were buying that message. So that resulted in the first epistle that Paul wrote, known as Galatians. So, any questions or comments on any of this? Okay, Kaufman wrote a four-page overview of Acts 15. So I'll begin with that. The first 35 verses of this chapter relate the event which has been called the Jerusalem Council, where it has been alleged the Jerusalem congregation convened a formal session to challenge the method of the Apostle Paul, especially with regard to the relationship between the law of Moses and the gospel of Christ. However, this so-called council can never be understood without reference to another report of it in Galatians chapter 2, delivered by the Apostle Paul himself. Paul's Galatian letter is supplementary information to what Luke gives in this chapter. First of all, the purpose of the meeting in Jerusalem was that of correcting the religious position of the majority in that congregation, including, it may be presumed, most, if not all, of the apostles, as well as James, the Lord's brother. The notion that Paul needed their approval in any manner is incorrect, except in the limited sense of his hoping to retain the unity in the Lord's body. Paul did not need the council, they needed him. Then about the so-called Jerusalem Council, which is a unfortunate naming. There was no such thing, and it's been mistaught and a false thought about what this was all through the centuries. But what it correctly was, this was just a meeting at the congregation at Jerusalem for Paul, Peter, John, and Jesus' brother James to straighten out and to call out the false teaching that these former Pharisees were binding on the Gentiles. So that's all that it was, what it has, all through the centuries and the millennia, what it's falsely been taken as is this congregation here were decided to put rules and regulations over all of the congregations everywhere. And that is not what this was at all. This was not correct to, this meeting was not to correct all of these other congregations. It was to correct the congregation at Jerusalem. They were not the one dictating what was going to happen. It was being dictated to them what they were no longer going to be doing on their false teaching. Okay, but about this so-called Jerusalem Council. This event in Acts chapter 15 is the same as that in Galatians chapter 2 for the following four reasons. First, Paul became a Christian in 37 AD, and if Luke's placement of this event is assumed to be chronological, then the date of it must be in the vicinity of 50 AD. This corresponds exactly with the 14 years following Paul's conversion. So as we read last week, Paul starts out in Galatians chapter 2 saying that it had been that 14 years have passed. I'll say best understood as it's been 14 years since Paul had become a Christian. And so if he became a Christian in 37 AD, that puts this right at 50 AD. And which 45 to 50 AD, that was the time of beginning the first missionary journey to also the time of beginning the second missionary journey. and this being right at that time. This is right before Paul and now Silas will start the second missionary journey, and then Barnabas will go on his own way to Cyprus to evangelize and teach in his home island, Cyprus. Okay, but the second point of why Acts chapter 15 is the same as Galatians 2. The variations in the accounts derive from Paul's reporting in the book of Galatians some conversations which took place in Jerusalem between himself and James, Peter, and John, evidently before the formal meeting was assembled. As far as Paul was concerned, the issue had already been decided before they had this council or meeting. And it was all decided and straightened out beforehand when Paul privately met with these other three. It should be noted that Paul's withstanding Peter to the face was an event that took place in Antioch. So, see, Paul had meetings two different times, one with Peter in Antioch, the second before this meeting with the congregation with James, Peter, and John. And so there are two different meetings that I think people have misunderstood, thinking they're only one, but it's very clear that the first time it was only Paul and Peter, and when Paul confronted Peter to his face, and that was in Antioch, wasn't even in Jerusalem. But this account here that Luke gives in Acts 15, the meeting that happens before the meeting with the congregation, meeting with these other three, that was in Jerusalem. It should also be noted that Paul's withstanding Peter to the face was an event that took place in Antioch from Galatians 2, verse 11, and does not belong to the narrative of what took place in Jerusalem. Okay, the third point. The council was in error, not the Apostle Paul. Although the brethren appointed Paul to go to Jerusalem, it was God who sent him there, and Paul told us that in Galatians 2, verse 2. And the reason that Paul went to Jerusalem, why God sent him, was not to persuade the council, but in order to correct the shameful failure of the apostles and elders in that city to admit the Gentiles without any restrictions to become Christians. See, they were only allowing Gentiles to become Christians with restrictions if they were conforming to circumcision and to the old law. Paul had as much authority as anyone in the Jerusalem congregation. For years, this great apostle had been preaching God's will regarding circumcision and the law of Moses, both of which had been nailed to the cross of Christ and totally eliminated. It would have been a shame for him to have submitted to the Jewish party in Jerusalem, even though it was supported by James and the apostles. Fortunately, Paul never did any such thing, but through God's revelation, he went to Jerusalem to correct them and bring them into line with the will of God, not the other way around. And I think that's another misunderstanding and false teaching on these two passages that this council at Jerusalem was correcting Paul, and it was no such thing. It was the other way around. Paul was correcting, namely, these three, being Peter, John, and James, and then they conformed, and they nearly completely direct this meeting, and they're the ones that Luke gives the account of speaking. And they are all straightened out and totally conform with the correct teaching now that Paul has helped them to see, and why they hadn't seen it before, and why they weren't following it previously. I don't know. I don't know that I've not gotten that explanation. I think it's kind of hard to understand why. But anyway, they're corrected, and as soon as they're corrected, then they take the correct teaching. The idea of the Jerusalem congregation having jurisdiction over what Paul delivered to the elders at Lystra and Derbe is foreign to the New Testament. Here, Paul was the instrument by which the Holy Spirit guided the apostles into all truth, as Jesus had promised, especially on the question on the relationship between Judaism and God's kingdom. Then the fourth and final point of why Acts 15 and Galatians 2 are the same account. The false accusation that Paul assumed for himself the sole credit for converting the Galatians, thereby elbowing Barnabas out of his share of their conversion, overlooks the fact that Paul was the spokesman and as such could truthfully say that he had converted them without denying credit to anyone. It was Paul who appointed the elders. It was Paul who was stoned. It was Paul alone at that time who was preaching the true gospel on the Gentile question. And besides all this, Barnabas had been persuaded by Peter and others of this false teaching. This alone was sufficient grounds for not including Barnabas's name as one who had converted them. Are there any questions or comments on any of this?